Hi, and welcome to another Applied Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Reeve. Today, I'm going to be sitting down with Linnell Utani to talk a little bit about medical radiology and its use of applied learning. So we'll get started. First, Linnell, just a little bit about what you teach, what your responsibilities are, your department chair, maybe just a little background on yourself.
Well, thanks very much, Dan, and I'm really happy to be here, and I'm grateful to be able to be living and working on these amazing Lekwungen territories. I am very fortunate to be the chair of Allied Health and Technologies at Camosun College, and that's a little bit of a mouthful, and what it means is that we have healthcare programs that are really married with technology in a variety of ways. So we have medical radiography, and that is the practice of using x-rays to take pictures of the human body. And then we are planning sonography, and that is using sound waves to take pictures of the human body. And then we also have medical laboratory assistant, and that is the phlebotomists that you might go and see when you get your blood drawn. They have had to integrate a substantial amount of technology into their scope of practice with point-of-care testing and electronic health records. So we're seeing a shift in pretty much all of healthcare, integrating a lot more technology. So when we think about any of these programs, it's really hard to divide or unlink any of that from applied learning.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for the clarification. A lot more than simply medical radiology. When you're thinking about where you start with your program, and and maybe for, excuse me, for your program, this is more self-evidence, what values do you see for your teaching that inspired you to kind of be more conscientious about applied learning in the field? Is it the development of technology in the field, or is this where your practice has always been in terms of using applied learning?
Well, it's really hard in, let's say, health learning, healthcare learning, or health science learning, to ever take the application out of the equation. There's the really terrible axiom, see one, do one, teach one in healthcare learning. And while it's no longer considered an appropriate learning strategy, it absolutely does speak to the fact that nothing we do can be unbound with the application of skill. So we do spend, for example, in the medical radiography program right now, students spend one term on campus and they immediately go out into the practicum environment to practice the skills that they've learned in the classroom as well as in the laboratory on actual patients and clients under the supervision of registered technologists. And the reason for that is that even if we could simulate every single different human quality,
right,
and put that into the lab, it still would not, from their standpoint, would not be supporting the development of situational judgment. And there are absolutely skills that you need to be applying in the workplace, learning when you are not successful, and being able to revise those behaviors, not necessarily on the fly, but in an intentional and reflective process.
Okay, well, that's that brings us right into part one then of our principles, and sort of take these questions and run with them as you will. So as a department chair, this might have a slightly different scope, but you can speak from either the voice of department chair or your experience as a teacher. So part one has to do, when we sort of think about the initial principles of applied learning, has to do with intention. And whether that's the preparation and development of curriculum or course planning or the whole package program planning, intention has to do with that kind of first moment of what is the ultimate set of goals you're setting out, and hopefully there's some correlation between intention and learning outcomes. When you're planning a program or, mm-hmm. or a class, or, and again, you can speak to us from different levels. What do you hope your students really get out of the activity or set of a series of activities in terms of like applied learning? And you kind of already touched on it, actually.
Well, let's look at it from the perspective of program first and then talk about course.
Sure.
And I think it's quite similar across a lot of health disciplines because we have national or provincial certification standards. So when we're talking about intention, for the most part, we're going to start with those certification standards. And they are already collaboratively developed with professionals across the country. They're usually, I won't say always, but they're usually generated through best practice evidence,
right.
And a great deal of informed behavior. So those professional standards are what we start with when we're designing or when we're thinking about what is our outcome. Because when our student graduates from, for example, the medical radiography program,
right.
we want them to be employable in the field. That means that they need to pass their national certification examination. And through accreditation, which is the certification of our learning organization teaching to the appropriate level of standards, we're required to teach all of those competencies and skills and theory in a very specific way.
Right.
So that guidance gives us something around which to build very explicit learning outcomes and creating activities and objectives within courses that have those end results. And right. so that's actually why it's very hard when we talk about healthcare programming to extract or looking at the applied learning model. It's actually really interesting to see how closely it reflects the way that we've already been doing things. And just
right.
to be very interested from an educational perspective that we're putting a label on a behavior that has
right.
probably existed for a really long time.
And it sounds like there's a fairly like specific set of roadmaps for every accredited institution, so there is that parallelism. Because like, for example, in other disciplines, sometimes there's a greater sort of academic freedom to follow and pursue these learning objectives. It sounds like
Go ahead. It's fabulous because we have tremendous academic freedom in the pathway that we take
right.
to reach those objectives. But the employer or the patient or client can have confidence in that whatever pathway the student traveled on to reach that level of certification or that professional designation, in the end,
mm-hmm.
the finish line for everyone was exactly the same.
Right.
So that the employer has the confidence to hire that person, and the patient or client can have confidence in that professional skills in what they're doing, you know, whether it's treating or taking their blood or taking their x-ray.
Right. Okay. So let's thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For the second principle is the idea around curricular preparedness and planning. And this is, if you imagine that the first four principles of applied learning have to do with sort of the planning and pre-activity analysis and thinking, how do you, let's talk to you as teacher here, how do you plan an applied learning activity? Like, what's your thought process when you consider like equipment, logistics, learning materials for the students?
My personal thought process as an instructor is obviously to have my end goal in mind.
Right.
But there are smaller chunks along that pathway that need to happen. What is a foundational theory that whatever applied learning thing that you want to do, or maybe even to take another step back from that, is applied learning the best way to do this? Because
right.
it isn't always. And when it is the best way to do this, what kinds of activities are going to result in the outcome that I'm looking for?
Right.
So if it is successfully interacting in a client behavior situation with an unknown being thrown into the mix.
Right.
A really great way of approaching that might be, let's study a variety of unknowns, and then we can create a case study. So we're going to walk through, let's say, a client interview. You know, how old are you? What's your name? Tell me your date of birth. And then through either planned and intentional, where we have a script that comes back to the student and we throw a curveball at them.
Right.
And so that in the moment, they're trying to apply the theory to that particular activity. Mm. And then the great part is that in most of the applied learning that I incorporate into my courses, I like to have them as extraordinarily low risk in terms of credit or marking, and to have them be very relational in terms of, let's sit and talk about how this went. Did it go sideways? Were you startled by this? Why were you startled by that? And what things do you need to brush up on? How can we learn differently from this? And, you know, reflecting on what we could have done differently or better in this situation. And where it starts to get really rich is when different students bring different perspectives.
Right.
And so we've talked about an applied learning scenario that had no physical things with it.
Right.
Now I'm a radiography instructor, so we can do applied learning that has no limit of things to it.
Right,
like
right.
X-ray machines and different pillows and bolsters, and we can apply that same thing to you're trying to use a model of a human skull and trying to reproduce a particular kind of an X-ray, and the assignment might be, you know, we'll give the students a description.
Mm-hmm.
Show us this skull phantom. So we call these simulated devices phantoms, with the zygomatic arches in relief. And then allow the student to try over and over and over and over again until they get it right.
Right.
And that is a completely different, although, depending on your outcome, they're both amazing applied learning experiences.
Right, right. It reminds me a little bit of Ibn Hayes in mechanical engineering, where they're trying to set up circumstances where not necessarily like fail in terms of try, attempt, and it didn't work, and then try, attempt, and again. It's
Absolutely.
Kind of built into the sauce of the applied learning activity, and that it's not, like, in the traditional sense, failing is not failing. Failing is just simply not achieving it, and sort of saying, how can we learn from this? And okay, maybe we have to do this, maybe we have to adjust the phantom, you know, whatever the thing is, to build that kind of attitude to.
Well, in healthcare, one of the core competencies across every discipline is the ability to respond and adapt to a changing client behavior, situation, condition, body habitus. So we're actually asked to adapt in every moment of our practice.
Right.
And applied learning gives us a really great way to allow students to play with that in a safe and controlled environment. So when we're talking about anything to do with healthcare, it's not ethical to try things out on human, humans.
Right. Yeah.
You know, unless you've gone to the research ethics board and you've had that conversation already.
Right.
So simulation or applied learning scenarios, case studies, that is the way that we create safety, not only for our public, but most importantly for our students.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this next part, then, this is just really an extension of what we've been talking about. So the principle is authenticity, and that's, it seems like, again, this is deeply built into everything that you're doing here. That idea that there's a real world or meaningful context to the kinds of activities, and it's not merely the equipment and the various types of equipment that you showed me earlier, but it's the ability to roll with the punches, to adapt to different behaviors, to be thrown curveballs and to be able to see them coming and then be able to figure out a strategy and maybe have to try that again and again and again. So maybe you could just talk briefly, when you think about authenticity, what is it about your student's activity that ties it? Like, is there a central thread or a couple of threads you can talk about that ties it to what's going on in the field? And obviously, your field is very deeply connected to current practices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that authenticity comes from a number of different places. Instructors who are incredibly proficient, and you might say they have a level of expertise in current practice, that's vital. Right. So the students are able to relate to how they're learning or what they're learning relates to current practice. And that helps a great deal through stories and simulation. So I think those are inextricably bound.
Right.
The environments in which we learn, especially for healthcare, they are definitely tied to the more authentic the environment is.
Right.
Obviously, from a safety perspective, at school we have a lot of simulation environments, and then our students go to practicum, which is so authentic as to be real.
Right.
Right? So that's where we get a level of authenticity there as well. And I think that they're actually... in the future, I hope at Camosun, mm-hmm. we have something in between, because shifting from an exclusively simulation environment to a practicum environment where a student doesn't have as much support, that's right. a very, very large step for a student to take.
Right.
And something in between. So we're constructing the Center for Health and Wellness at the Alex and George Campbell Center for Health and Wellness out at Interurban Campus. And along with simulation, we have visioned a teaching clinic.
Right.
So an area on campus where we can have active learning, active applied learning, but a higher degree of support and oversight from actual instructors so that we can keep our eye on student learning
right.
at the same time as guarding public safety. Once a student moves out into the practicum, the balance of priority shifts
right.
to preserving and serving the public safety first
right.
and allowing student learning to happen second. So we're envisioning when some of that treatment or service mm-hmm. comes back to the college that we can better balance what's happening from a student perspective, even if that's just because we have the time and the space to step away because we're not prioritizing throughput. And I can't think of a more authentic way
right.
in which to have applied learning relate to practice.
Right. Okay, well, that perfectly rolls into our next idea, which is reflection, which is coincidentally.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so this is the idea of like reflecting on the space and time to analyze the systems, the learning, the pedagogy, the approaches, and then of course reflection doesn't go away once the process starts. In fact, you've already pointed to a number of ways in which you're looking to recreate this reflective practice. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about the importance reflection in the creation and the development of applied learning activities.
That's wonderful. One of the things that I think is really exciting about the relationship between education and the profession, and any profession, is how the two learn and evolve from each other. So right now the profession sets standards for us to follow.
Right.
But through the application of reflective practice, which is much more of an educational behavior, we are now starting to influence professional behaviors. Because it used to be,
right.
you would learn your profession and you would set out and you have arrived. You show up on the worksite and you could do that same thing.
Right.
And realistically, for many professions, it didn't matter if something new came out. You could continue to do it the same way and get the job done. healthcare changes and evolves so, so rapidly, that reflective practice actually has become a core part of being a professional. And I think that that is in direct relation to what has often happened at education. It hasn't always happened in education. You know, we have the amazing opportunity through SD and PD at Camosun to spend time in reflective practice and to building, so taking that same idea and building it intentionally into a learning activity. In some places, simulation might describe that as debriefing after an activity. So what went well? What went sideways? What information do you wish you had that you didn't? And what? How would that have changed an outcome? So in healthcare, it's really important so that we don't make the same mistakes twice. And that's actually the most important thing, I think, with applied learning, is that we should have the tolerance in the school, or at least the educational environment, for nearly limitless mistakes, as long as they're not the same ones. And in practice, in actual practice, we have to consider health and safety. So I might not be able to try again over and over and over on the same client, but if I don't reflect and alter my practice behavior for my next client, I'm never going to improve.
So it's now, it's echoing through the professional. Okay, very interesting. Okay, so now we're gonna get up now to talk about the setup of students. And again, expectation probably has something to do with this as well. Students who probably come to your programs are probably expecting stuff, but still, I wanna talk a little bit about orientation, training, and engagement. How do you explain like the applied learning process to your students? The why are we doing this? And connected to the how are we doing this?
Wow, that's actually a really interesting question, because you don't often think about that. It's embedded into what we do. It happens. So in many courses, you spend a first couple of days talking about what are our goals and what does that success look like at the end? And then you do spend some time talking about how we're going to get there. In some theory classes, then you jump directly into the learning. And the goal is taking the tests or the quizzes. In an applied learning class, at least the ones that are happening within our program right now, I can look at it a couple of different ways. There's laboratory activities, and if you have a complex skill that you want to teach, or a string of complex skills, it's really important to break them down into simple, digestible, accessible, and observable behaviors. And having clear communication with the students on what those assessments and observable behaviors are, so that in the moment you can identify when something exists and when something does not exist. So that whole process becomes your theory, becomes your outline of how you're going to do and what you're going to do. And then the activity evolves from that. And the best assessments tie directly to that. You know, we wouldn't necessarily call it an orientation or a training phase, but we tie it to the procedural learning that happens for the students.
Okay, so then we're going to go, and again, I think that this is interesting because you've kind of talked about this in the professional acting through. So the next phase is something called monitoring and reflection and continuous improvement. Recognizing that sometimes things don't go as planned. Sometimes that's for the better, and sometimes it just goes sideways. How do you assess your students' experience when things happen like that, and how do you reconcile that with like they're trying to meet the learning goals?
So really important, I think I mentioned earlier that applied learning activities in our program and courses, we try and keep them low stake. And that actually provides a level of comfort and a willingness for a student to engage in the activity and some tolerance for when things go sideways. Right. And they do. They do. Whether it's an attitudinal or we construct an excellent idea and it does not work the way that we envisioned it working.
Right.
And I think that the collaborative assessment of that, where the student and or the students and the instructor have agreed, and that's usually part of the
right.
success, have agreed that when something goes wrong, that we all have the strength and permission to say, you know, this did not work for me.
Right.
And then we spend some time talking about why. And realistically, I've seen some of the most rich learning experiences follow something that wasn't successful.
Right.
Because dissecting it, having real communication around whether it's conflict or whether it's mismatched expectations.
Right.
It allows you to reach usually a comparable and sometimes improved outcome.
Right.
And then as instructors, it's up to us to incorporate that into the next iteration. We're fortunate that we have the next year, we hope,
right.
of course, to teach the next opportunity,
right.
the next classroom. For our students, it's really important that they walk away from that activity with a level of hopefully relating to that activity as achieving the outcome, whether or not the activity in itself was successful.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really quite interesting, and see that continuous development. Now we're going to turn our attention, and again, for the listener, I mean, you can hear how these ideas and principles, they blend into each other. I'm sorry if there's any overlap here, but I think what's important is that we're not laying out necessarily a linear path. This is, I like to think of it as a spiral of ideas and approaches that kind of build on each other. So we're going to talk a little bit then about assessment and evaluation. How do you structure your formative and summative assessments in light of applied learning?
Well, it really depends on the environment that
right.
the students are in. The level of capability that we have in terms of expectations. And we generally,
mm-hmm.
and this is in relation to the medical radiography program at this moment in time.
Okay.
We have a set of didactic experiences that are designed to create a foundation of novice level of learning with the goal of patient safety.
Right.
And then we allow the students to move out into the practicum environment and interact at that level.
Right.
So the assessments that are done are, is the student appropriately interacting at the level of skill as expected?
Right.
And we receive that feedback from technologists in the workplace, and we do support our students, but we as instructors are not physically side by side with them the entire
right.
time that they're out there. So that can be a very stressful environment for
right.
them. And so sometimes our role in assessment and evaluation at that level is helping the students interpret the kinds of feedbacks that they're receiving from the workplace environment
right.
and helping them, because we have a different perspective as educators,
right.
but relate that to their own personal practice and behaviors or strategies for improving.
Right.
So that's a very different look than assessment and evaluation will have in the classroom
right.
or the laboratory.
Right. So just so I understand, so you're saying like one of the levels, because the practicum comes so quickly, it's January and out they go as novices with a base level of skills, you have to help them make sense of the feedback they're getting from their employers. And I'm sure the employers, because there's a diversity of employers, there's no set standard necessarily of how they're going to say things or what they're going to emphasize or...
Exactly. You know, and that's actually a significant challenge for health professions across the board. Right. Because we're dealing with humans and caring for humans, and we have to go where the humans are. And if we're doing something that is diagnostic investigatory medicine, right, we have to go where the ill and injured humans are.
Right.
And in those environments, we have an infinite amount of possibilities.
Right.
And students at a lower level of skill or capability are going to interact in those spaces very differently than our advanced students might,
right,
where we would be starting to expect them to perform at an approaching entry to practice capabilities.
Right.
And that guidance looking completely different.
Right.
But still needing to have that feedback or the assistance in relating to their feedback, and that feeds back into relational practice. Again, you, right, like you said, these are not 100% separate, distinct, linear things. And right, I think that's the beauty of the circle. You describe it as a spiral from the learning model.
Right.
Is that we should all be able to see how a number of the things that we already do,
right,
are fitting within this model.
Right.
And if they are successful, how do we build on and replicate those in a wider variety of courses and areas? And yeah, I think it's actually just a testament to the skill and capabilities that we have at Camosa.
Right.
And I think community colleges have always had that reputation,
right,
of being very hands-on learning.
Right.
And this is, I think, a different way of describing that hands-on learning process.
Right, right. Okay, last one, acknowledgement. how do you celebrate student transformation? You have a student come in first semester, and they're excited about the field, but all of the development, some of which they expected, there are tests to write, there are quizzes to meet, but it sounds like from what you've described to me, there's a kind of professionalization of working in the field, working with people who are hurt, working with doctors, working with other people in hospitals, all of that, that transformation that takes place over the time you know the students. How do you celebrate that transformation?
I have to get a little bit more curious about the question and the purpose of, I think this is the acknowledgement,
yes,
piece. Is that question related to the curriculum, to the individual student?
I think this might be the sneaky hardest question.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best answers I've had from a series of interviews is someone who said, we don't do it enough.
And
what she meant, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. What she meant was, it's not that we don't give up marks. Of course we do. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we don't have award ceremonies. Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's that there's something in acknowledging people's transition and effort and being there and showing up in terms of it's not the big star you get at the end or the A you get. This acknowledgement is a more person-to-person kind of mentoring kind of, that's at least, this is my envisionment, and you can certainly chime in here, of how we really, education isn't just about getting a degree or getting new knowledge. It's not simply that. There usually, I can't think of a discipline where it doesn't also come with some change in the person.
Absolutely. So that definitely helps me
right,
frame it a bit. I think at this moment in time, because this idea hasn't been as intentional a part of our practice as
right,
educators as it probably right, should be, as my peer colleague, whoever it was that shared that with you, stated, we are probably not doing it enough. But those that are,
right,
and I do want to call out or acknowledge
right,
one of the medical radiography educators, Brent McMillan, just received an Excellence for Teaching Award from our professional organization. So CAMRT, which
right,
is the national certification body, through nominations of his peers, colleagues, and most importantly, graduates and students
right.
Nominated him for the way that he transforms learning in the classroom. And I think the thing that he does, not only does he interject humor, mm-hmm. but more importantly is he notices. And that's, I think, the key to acknowledgement, is noticing the change or noticing the moment right. when someone transitions from struggling to capable.
Right.
And marking that, whether it's by a word or in any other more formal way.
Right.
And I think we actually, as humans, we need to all get better at doing that, because we're very, very, very good at being critical.
Right.
We're very, very, very good at identifying people's flaws or faults. And we're less good at acknowledging people's effort, because it takes effort and persistence. Some people have called it grit,
right.
To navigate through a lot of different challenges.
Right.
And I think that's actually one of the pieces that makes an applied learning activity that goes sideways
right.
successful in the end, is if you acknowledge this went sideways.
Right.
And also, what did we learn anyway? And where right. are our gaps? What do we all need to do more of to make this better in the future?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an excellent answer, because it's a difficult question. I know for myself, I think of acknowledgement as just a word that says, "Hey, I love the trajectory you're on. You know, I think you're making great strides," or whatever it is for that person. Something that acknowledges the human side.
We have tons of stuff that acknowledges the technical side.
Right.
You graduate, you get a diploma, you
right.
take your exam, you pass a test, and you become employed. Those are all actually acknowledgments of your achievement,
right.
but they're not the ones that that relate to our future practice.
Right.
That make us better at whatever it is that we're trying to learn.
Right. Right. Any other final thoughts that have percolated through this interview?
I was actually thinking back to when I took the TTW course,
mm-hmm.
and we spent just a tiny bit of time talking about the idea around some Indigenous learning or some Indigenous learning practices, where they were always about... Or in the particular context that we were talking, they were about whatever thing needed to be done, whatever skill or task, and the learning was natural. It didn't seem like it was an effort, because you knew what you wanted in the end, and that was the reason for everything that you were doing. And I find that sometimes we look at college and university from the colonial context, it's a bit of a machine for its own purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have that reason, that result, that very intentional. So just heading right back to that very first thing that you talk about is that it's all about intention. And I love that it threads through our principles and values here at Camosun.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, let's wrap it up. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Dan.
Very informative.
Very much a pleasure.